It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now the proverb goes, if at first you don't succeed, try again. But what's really in it for us to persevere? Rachel Feinzig is the work and life columnist for the Wall Street Journal. She recently wrote a column called The Case for Allowing Yourself to Be Bad at Something. And she spoke about the piece with Wisconsin Public Radio's Lee Rayburn.
And Rachel, what inspired you to write this column?
So I was at a yoga class with a colleague and friend this past summer. I am a runner and I got injured. So I was like that girl, you know, that injured runner in the yoga class trying to fit in with all the experienced yogis. I am so bad at yoga. And I said to my friend, like, I hope after the class, I hope you weren't watching me. And she told me two things. One, no, I wasn't watching you. Like, I don't care, which I think is an important takeaway for all of this. But the second thing she said was, you know, my husband won't even come to yoga with me. He won't do anything that he's not great at. And I just immediately knew I had to write a column about this and why we are so bad at being bad at things.
Well, and how do you get good if you're not bad at it first? And maybe that says more about me than anything else, Rachel, but I certainly had to wonder when I read your article, how does anybody start out of the gate being so brilliant and being able to dance so well? Doesn't
completely
happen, does it?
No. And I recounted my yoga story to someone that I talked to for the story. She's actually a professional mountain biker. And her response was like, what did you expect was going to happen to you at yoga class? Like, people spend years trying to master this stuff. And it often comes with periods of getting worse or staying stagnant. Like, progress is not linear and doesn't come in this kind of like lockstep, you know, way that we expect. And so, yes, I think you're completely, completely right. It's totally normal to be bad at something, especially at first.
Rachel Feinzig from the Wall Street Journal looked into this for us, and I believe at some level we could all relate. What are you bad at? And Rachel, as you write in the Wall Street Journal, that you heard more profanity while interviewing for this story than you did when you actually did a story about profanity.
I was so quiet. I could not believe how upset and like deeply emotionally affected people were as they told me these stories about their failings, about things, you know, that oftentimes were like fairly inconsequential, just in the sense that they were hobbies, things they were doing for pleasure, not like I have messed up this massive part of my life. And yet they were just torn and tortured about it, really.
And it feels that way, and it sounded that way from the interviews and the curse words you couldn't use for your story, Rachel. But it goes towards, and you write about this, social perfectionism, the trend of social perfectionism, that we have to be great. There is no room for error here. But those trends are changing, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what I felt like really made this an important story to tell right now. This idea that all of us have become more perfectionistic over the years. There is research that's been done on this, analyzing students. We all fall somewhere on this kind of scale of perfectionism, and the average is just shifting more to the right, more toward, yeah, that kind of no tolerance for failure, obsessed with how other people are perceiving us. This idea, they call it social perfectionism. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it that we can talk about, but I think it makes a story like this just way more pertinent in this moment.
So you are way out of balance at a yoga class and you think everybody is looking at you, even though they're doing the downward dog. So couldn't even see you unless they were doing the position incorrectly. But there is this sense that, oh my gosh, everybody's looking at me. And the reality is everybody's kind of thinking about that themselves, aren't they? That you're not on a stage.
Oh, completely. And we're all just totally self-obsessed as humans. I don't even mean that in like a bad way, but you know, we're worried about how we look as compared to kind of picking apart other people, especially in a situation like this where it's just a yoga class. Like, I wanted to talk to people about all parts of their lives, and certainly some of it was about work, but some of it was just about this kind of plethora of hobbies that people have or side interests. And it was just fascinating to see how people thought about being watched and being viewed.
Mm-hmm. So right now, I want to know what you're bad at. Or if you don't think you're bad at anything, I'd love to hear from you with our guest, Rachel Feinzig, who is the work and life columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Let's go to Marcia in Stevens Point.
Yes, I'd just like to tell you that I don't consider I'm bad at anything because I do not have an inner critic.
Well, what's that like?
Well, it's fabulous because I don't have to feel bad all the time.
So dancing, singing, it doesn't matter. Ice fishing, there's no way. I mean, you're good at it, or you just don't have anybody telling you that it doesn't matter.
I never considered it matter. If I have fun doing something, what's the difference whether I'm doing it as good as the next person?
If you're having fun doing something, who cares how good you are at it? Rachel, that really resonates with me.
I love that. We should all, me especially. Marsha's my new therapist. What a great advice.
Exactly. And so as I think of this, how do you get rid of that inner critic? Marsha doesn't seem to have ever had it, which I would think might be a blessing and a curse, but how do you shake it?
I think part of it is just embracing the fact that you're a beginner, like telling yourself, reminding yourself that people like helping beginners. It just being kind of honest about it and asking for help can make other people feel like they're the experts.
Rachel Feinzig, work and life columnist for the Wall Street Journal. And going back to the idea that everybody's watching you, you talked to a business owner, Elliot Pepper, for your story in the Wall Street Journal, and he had some glaring discrepancies. There were some things he was not great at, but he didn't want to admit it, and it cost him, at least business-wise, on his bottom line. Once he realized that he was able to fill the gaps and do so, his quote was, "People don't care that much." People don't care that much, Rachel.
I know. I love that quote. And I thought it was a really fascinating example because he would go to these networking events for entrepreneurs, you know, where people kind of offer helpful tips and people would ask, you know, how's he doing? And he would just,
great.
He'd just say, I'm killing it. But he couldn't, you know, admit his failings, which were not really about like the substance of his business. He's an accountant and a financial planner, and he knew the ins and outs of all these complicated things, but he couldn't handle things like, you know, collecting on invoices. And so, you know, for him, the answer came from finding a business partner who was A, good at the things he wasn't good at, and B, who he felt comfortable opening up to and learning from. And that kind of just solved the problem.
Let's go to Pat in Green Bay with things we're not so great at and why that might not matter.
Thank you for accepting my phone call.
Thanks for calling. What do you got?
All right. So my thing that I am just horrible at is reading people.
That's got to be rough, Pat.
Well, okay. To put it in context, I have, as I like to call it, my side hustle. I'm practicing for retirement. I create wooden wares. So wooden spoons, you know, utensils, things like that. So I'm always trying to look in the magic crystal ball of what do people want next year? Well, right, I've been doing this for three years. I still don't have it right.
Well, it's just 3 years, Pat. I think you got to give it 30. And even after that, human behavior, that you've really, who would be very good at that, Pat? I would be interested to meet the person who would be very good at that. Rachel, so great with wooden wares, but not easy to figure out what wooden wares people are going to want.
I mean, it reminds me of the Elliot Pepper story, right? Where you're good at doing the thing and and there's this other skill set that's not really central to the doing of the thing that you're missing. So I feel like it's something where you could, you know, just ask someone else for help. And I also think it just goes back to the point of like you said, it's only been 3 years. Everything takes longer than we think it will to get right. It's been my experience.
That is WPR's Lee Rayburn speaking with Rachel Feinzig at the Wall Street Journal. There is more conversation ahead. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's jump back into our being bad at things and doing them anyway conversation. The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Feinzig recently spoke with WPR's Lee Rayburn.
Jeff in Superior standing by. Jeff, what are you bad at?
Good afternoon. I'm 62 years old, and I've spent a lot of money in my lifetime trying to become good at carving pumpkins.
Like just the nose and the eyes, or the elaborate three? Yeah.
You know, those young women in their 20s and 30s, they're so effortless. You know, they can do it for the kids. But I don't have that flair, that intuition, or that whatever je ne sais quoi they have. But they seem to do, their pumpkins are perfect. And I destroy a pumpkin when I try to make it, I try to carve it. And it's, I feel sad, I feel sorry for the pumpkin. But
wait,
I keep trying.
Now, is this something you only do during Halloween season? Or is this a year-round practice that you've developed until you put in the hours to become good at it?
Oh, I'm still not good at it. I've put in hours. I've lived in community. I've lived with people. I've even tried to bring this privately so I'm not embarrassing myself.
Wow.
But I keep trying to make a pumpkin that I can say, doggone it, that's a darn good pumpkin.
Well, wrong time of year to be terrible at pumpkin carving, Jeff, but I very much appreciate the call. And Rachel Feinzig, it's interesting because sometimes being great at something isn't that great. And you talk to a pro BMX biker about what it means to be perfect at being a BMX biker, and it just didn't seem, at least for the person that you interviewed, to be fun.
I think it can take a lot of the fun out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he told me, you know, for him now, because he decided not to go that route of being a professional BMX biker, you do a trick one time, you do it and you enjoy it. And being a professional, you have to do it 100 times until there's no possible way that you could not get it right. And I mean, it wears on people. He found that it was much more sustainable to just keep it as a hobby versus risking injury. He found that a lot of professional BMXers had trouble with money and addiction. And I think there's a sense that keeping something fun oftentimes means not obsessing over perfecting it.
Mm-hmm. And you do it so often that it's muscle memory, that you could do it in your sleep. And once you're doing it in your sleep, where's the fun in that?
I mean, it becomes a job, right? A reason to get paid for jobs because no matter how great they are, they're still not that fun.
Let's turn now to Paul in Northern Illinois.
Hi, you've inspired me to pivot just a hair, even though my main thing is yet to come. My dad was a professional drummer, played for Frank Sinatra, the Rat Pack, and when I was a young teen aspiring to be just like him, he said, don't do it. You're going to discover that the music business is just going to eat you alive and it won't make you happy. So I keep drums as a hobby.
Yeah.
And I agree with that previous statement. But my thing that I'm really bad at is reading a room. And I feel like my mission in life is to build bridges and connect people. So I don't mind if I kind of play the fool sometimes in order for people to either get a laugh at my expense or just connect.
So, and this is the second time we've heard this, Paul, and and I can relate to it too. Sometimes it's difficult to relate to people. It's tough to know what they want or where they want to go with it. And sometimes it's not easy to read a room. Rachel, we've heard this a couple times now, and it's an interesting take on and a little bit different than your article.
Right. This idea that people are an enigma. I mean, I think it's true. And I think it's probably especially true in this moment after the pandemic, right? I think a lot of people are probably feeling like they have trouble reading a room or connecting to people in the right way or not being awkward, you know, as we kind of like totally gear up and go back to, you know, some semblance of what things were like in 2019.
And I want to go back to the moment, this idea that we don't like being bad at something because we have this sense that we're being watched or that there is an audience. And I wonder if we were bad at something and there was an audience, whether or not there'd be a change in society. If there was, you know, I am a bad dancer. And so if I were to bad dance in front of anybody, whether or not that would make it a little bit easier for all the other bad dancers in the world to shake their tail feather.
Oh, totally. I can't remember who, but someone I was talking to for the piece was like, is there anything better than watching someone just leave it all out on the dance floor especially when they're just doing their own thing and it's not like they're some professionally trained like ballroom dancer. I think it leaves room for way more like joy, and it gives other people permission to just be themselves. And one other benefit that we haven't talked about yet, but that I heard from a surfer who I talked to for this piece was, you know, in so many parts of our lives, we have to be the leader, the one who's helping other people. She talked about how freeing it was to not have to be good at surfing, to not feel that pressure. It's just can be really liberating.
And we put this up on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We asked people about the stuff they tried and were bad at it and what happened. We got a response from Pete who said, I took guitar lessons earlier this year, started off great, but once we got into chords, I struggled. Wasn't putting in the practice time I needed, and then when the summer came, I said I was too busy to continue the lessons, but I wish I had learned guitar. And Pete got a supportive response from Paul on Facebook who says, get back to the guitar, guy. Chords are not that bad if just learn the basic ones. He says, I struggled too, but my daughter encouraged me to get back at it. And now I play in jam bands on Saturdays. Well, get back at it. And you know what's interesting? I've tried to play guitar too. And the one thing I realized is it hurts. You need calluses to do that. So right out of the gate, it's not something you're going to be good at no matter what. But there is this sense that, you know, if you stick with it, you'll be at least good enough to not have to hide it. Right?
Well, yeah. And I also think that there oftentimes does have to be a certain level of being good at something to have it be enjoyable. So to reach that, like, you know, something of a flow state where you feel like you're doing it, like the surfer that I talked to, I mean, ideally, like to get up on a wave, you know, is like this exhilarating feeling, or to be good enough in the water that you can paddle out and be there experiencing it. So, I mean, I'm all for being bad at things too, but I do understand this idea that, you know, I think that for me, if I was just better at yoga, I could do more of the poses and I would be in more of like a flow state, you know, during the class.
So have you gotten back to yoga, Rachel?
No, I totally have given up and just gone back to running. I it's true. I ran away from the yoga as I could.
I've given up on guitar too, and it turns out I'll just have soft fingers and that'll be the way it's going to be. But since you published your story in the Wall Street Journal, what kind of feedback have you received? Have you heard more bad stuff?
Yes, golf has been a big theme for people. A lot of people feeling bad about their golf game. All kinds of things that I haven't even thought of. People have told me about their hobbies, things that they ditched, and then things that they, you know, pursued and eventually got great at. You know, I think photography was mentioned. It's been fascinating to hear people's. I really feel like it goes to the heart of how we feel about ourselves as humans.